Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, partnering with donors from all walks of life to improve Southeastern Virginia through grants, scholarships, and leadership initiatives. Learn more at hamptonroadscf.org.
Hello, everyone. I'm Barbara Hamlee. If you're married, ever been married, or in a committed relationship, I want you to think back to the time when you knew this is the one. Is that memory one that still makes you smile, think roses and love and harmony? Or have the thorns of life made the memory prickly? Where are you in your spousal or committed relationship? If it's good, how can you keep it that way? And if it's thorny, how can you avoid getting pricked? Dr. Alvion Lyons and Dr. Keith Newby on couples relationships. That's next on Another View, right after this national, regional, and local news from NPR and WHRO News.
Discussing today's topics from an African-American perspective, this is Another View.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Another View. I'm Barbara Hamlee. As always, before we get started, I want to tell you about a couple of things that are happening that are actually health-related. Project ORF and the City of Norfolk's Community Services Board is holding its second annual Surviving Through Mental Health event in recognition of Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. Now, this is happening on July 9th at the Attucks Theater. The doors open at 5 p.m. and the program runs from 5:30 until 8:30 p.m. This year's theme is Family Matters Part 2, Healing in Community. And this is continuing the conversation by centering mental health as a shared responsibility within our communities. And they started this in 2024, and every year more and more people come out to participate. So please keep that on your calendar. It is free and open to the community, and they would love to have you there. And this one is further into July, but I wanted you to know that the Mount Chesapeake Church's second annual community health fair will be happening on Saturday, July 25th at 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And this community-focused event promotes health awareness, provides vital services, and connects families with trusted healthcare professionals and community partners. And they're going to have testing. They're going to have things for family-friendly activities for the kids and so forth. So come on out to and all major healthcare systems in the Hampton Roads area, Chesapeake Regional, Sentara, Bon Secours, Riverside, and CHKD will all be there. So that is on July 25th, Saturday at the Mount in Chesapeake. And finally, this is something that's special, I know, to one of our guests on our show today. So Dr. Cassandra Newby-Alexander is being featured in the PBS documentary Declarations, Black Americans and the Revolutionary War. It premieres this coming Monday, June 29th at 10 p.m. on WHRO-TV. And you want to tune in and pay attention, because we all know Dr. Newby-Alexander is one of our favorite guests on our show, and she is an incredible historian, and now she's going to be, well, she already has been featured nationally in a lot of different ways, but, and she's also Dr. Keith Newby's big sister, so there you go.
Much older sister. She's going to get me for that.
See,
one for
exactly.
Sure.
She is going to get you for that. So I'm sure you've heard the stereotypes. Black women are independent to a fault, and they're not willing to be reliant on a male partner, or there aren't enough valuable black men to marry because they're all locked up, or even that black couples constantly fight to have the upper hand, causing mistrust. So what's the truth? How are black people navigating love and commitment? Here with some answers and backed by popular demand, relationship expert Dr. Alvion Lyons. Hi, Alvion.
Hey,
how are you? And our favorite cardiologist, Dr. Keith Newby, who is Hampton Roads Medical Group Cardiovascular Medical Director and Market Director of Community Health Improvement and Engagement with Bon Secours.
Wow. I'm going to trim that down. I'm fine with trimming that down. I was going to say, just call me the cryology director and call it a day.
Virginia's favorite cardiologist. Oh, well,
there we go.
That's why you're the boss.
That's
why she's an expert in relationships.
Exactly. So I want to say to you all, to both of you, happy birthday.
Thank you. Belated birthday.
We're all June babies.
I know, June babies.
I knew we connected some kind of way. That was great.
Which means that there are six people in this room right now.
True that. I also want to share something with you guys, so because I know it is something that you will appreciate. So this past Tuesday, I think you know how the days run.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
past Tuesday, I had the honor of serving as MC for the graduation celebration at Tastency with First Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. For the students who graduated this year, who were a part of the Tidewater Gardens community. As you know, that whole area is being revitalized and is now called Kindred. And these are students whose families had to relocate while the new buildings were being built, and there were a lot of different things going on with them. But between their families, the mentors that they had, the People First organization that works directly with families and so forth, they had about 30-ish children to actually finish high school this year, for mm-hmm. this year. Mm-hmm. And what was so special to me was that the majority of the students were male, mm-hmm. were black males.
That's what I like to hear.
And it was just, you know, for all of the things that could have derailed their ability to be able to finish high school. They stuck with it. They got their diploma. And Dr. Jeff Rose, who is the new superintendent for Norfolk Public Schools, was the keynote speaker. And he was there and able to see how when community comes together, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. we can put things mm-hmm. together. Isn't mm-hmm. that special?
I love it. I love every bit of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
it's better to hear great things out of them.
Exactly. We do. Absolutely. So I have a question for the two of you, since we're talking about relationships.
Let us.
I want to know when both of you, since I talked about in the beginning, that moment when you knew that your spouse was the one.
I want to know what was it. I can tell you exactly what it was. First time I laid eyes on her. I met her when I was at Duke. I was a cardiology fellow. And it was at the V8, which is across the street, because there's a relationship with them. And I remember going up on the floor. She was a floor nurse at the time. And I remember walking up there, and I mean, she caught my eye. And I looked, I said, oh man, who is that? And I kept making excuses to go on that floor. She laughs about that now, because she didn't even have a clue. I was making up patients to go up there to see, just so I could be near her. But I knew time I laid eyes on her. That I would say. Then I got to know her, and she told me she would never marry a doctor. But I convinced
you
her
convinced
otherwise.
You convinced otherwise, clearly.
Dog with a bone. Once I knew, that was it. I mean, it was a wrap.
And that was it.
It was a feeling. It was something about her presence that really attracted me. It's you know, sometimes when you watch people, even how they walk, how they talk, mm-hmm. there's something that just draws you in. And for her, it was just the look, because I thought she was a gorgeous woman. Mm-hmm. And then to be able to really connect with her, and then we saw similarities in our like, I'm gonna tell you, it's interesting. Money and politics are two things that can break people apart.
Absolutely.
And we had the same viewpoints, you know. It was really pretty quick in terms of me knowing. Now, it took her a little longer, but I knew pretty early on. But I really was fixated on saying, I'm going to get this woman.
And how long have y'all been married?
28 years.
28 years. Yeah. Alvin, when did you know?
So mine is less romantic.
How do we know that?
But beautiful nonetheless. Okay, so you guys know that I got married super young, right? So we got married at 19 and 20 years old. So we were just barely in college when we got married. And because of the time frame, we were what people refer to as broke. So we
remember them days.
So we used to have to take our clothes to the laundromat because we didn't, in our respective apartments, have you know,
washer and dryers
mm-hmm. in our apartments. And when we were at the laundromat one day, he pulled all of my clothes out of the dryer and he started to fold them. And the thing that did it for me is that he folded my underwear. Now, it may not sound like a big deal, but understand what that meant to me. How I interpreted that is the things, the small things that would not necessarily matter, he still gave as much attention to as the thing that I would have noticed, right? Mm. So like folding your large pieces of clothing makes sense, right? But you could totally just stick underwear like at the top or in the bottom, but mm-hmm. he didn't do that. He actually took the time to fold each of my underwear.
Wow.
And it was at that moment that I was like, he's going to be that one because he cares about stuff pertaining to me that nobody else sees. And truthfully, I could have given him an easy pass on, but he didn't choose to do that. And so I understand that endurance in relationships is about small things. It's not the big stuff. Mm-hmm. It's the stuff nobody else sees. That's the stuff that makes good relationships.
And how long have y'all been married?
30 years.
30 years. Wow. I'm the baby of the group. We just celebrated 18 years last Sunday.
Let me tell you something. In this day and time, if it lasts longer than 18 minutes, that's
you're
a long
doing a
time.
Great job, right?
Because that's the one thing that's interesting, but we'll never get into
it. So, if you listen to society, culture, you know, some of the things I read in the intro, you know, why is it that Black family or there's such a negative perception of Black love and commitment?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with media, you know, like, and to our disadvantage historically, you don't get to see the three-dimensional Black family very often, right? Like, so we were often typecast in ways that suggested that we were either criminal in some way, we were indigent in some way, we were mm-hmm. dependent, we needed to be saved. All of these one-dimensional versions of who we are. And so it wasn't quite literally, I think, until like the Jeffersons or so that you really were starting to see relationships, Black relationships in particular, in a more and more than one or two dimensions, right? Mm-hmm. And then for my generation,
good times even,
and yeah. good times also. Mm-hmm. But the Cosbys was it for us, right? Like
yeah.
because we came from an educated family of color where our lives were kind of like the Cosbys. Then is what Blackish was to this generation, mm-hmm. you know, being able to see that we're not typecast. We're not just this one thing. We are not a monolith. We are dynamic individuals with deep senses of family and love and fun and engagement and upward mobility. And it's not odd. That is not an aberration. It is so much more our realities than it is the aberration. But we weren't given the opportunity to show as much of that. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, that's still being controlled in terms of what movies get greenlit and what kinds of shows we are often, you know, cast in. So it is really incumbent upon us to be able to speak to, which I will give social media, because, you know, I'm not a huge fan, but I will give it credit for that. Because when you see how many young people of color are in passionate relationships and traveling and doing exciting things, building businesses together and raising absolutely amazing children, I am glad that nobody gets to decide that show, that spotlight.
Right. So that they can show
it themselves.
They get to do it
absolutely.
Themselves.
Yeah.
So what makes a good marriage?
Ooh.
I'm going to let her answer that.
I'm going to let you start.
Oh, you're going to let me start?
Yeah. What makes a good marriage?
Well, for me personally, and you know my Christian beliefs, mm-hmm. I honestly have this sense that if you tie in God in your relationship and really look at it from a perspective of people say marriages should be 50-50. I think they should be 100-100. Mm-hmm. I have my 100%. You have your 100%. Mm-hmm. What I find that people sometimes do, well, I'm not going to give you my 100 till you do your 100. And I think that's where we fail. I mean, biblically, you know, Apostle Paul said, love your wife as Christ loved the church. So that's an undying, you know, love that's not dependent upon somebody doing something first.
Right.
So, and unfortunately so, in my opinion, I think we've become somewhat of a selfish society. It's all about me. And people don't realize that a marriage is that relationship that's developing where you become one. So it can't be about you anymore, right. just yourself. And that's where I see in healthcare, I always get on my men about taking care of themselves. Because I say, if you have this attitude that you don't need to do X, Y, or Z, taking care of yourself, make sure your pressures are controlled, all that, think about how that's going to impact your spouse. I mean, you got to get out of this selfish mode, you know, that it's all about you. Because if you have a stroke or whatever, or say you have kidney disease, and all of a sudden you have your, somebody has to take you to doctors, or they got to wipe your tail because you can't do it for yourself anymore, you're putting a onus of burden on another person that you otherwise could prevent. So really, I think that ability to see outside of yourself, to say, okay, look, and I try my best. I'm just learning now. I mean, I'm old dude now, but I'm still learning. I try to see the world through my wife's eyes. You know, I try to see the world as she sees it, because we're different people. And as a male perspective, a woman's perspective is totally different from each other. But I always try to see the world through her eyes. And what I try to do now is when she talks, I listen. I don't comment. I don't try to fix the world anymore like I used to. I just say, well, and I will ask her, what is it that you would have me do? You want me just to listen? You want me to comment? You tell me what's going to work for you. And if she tells me.
Because your initial reaction would be to fix it, right?
I mean, fix it. I'm a fixer. That's, I mean, because what I do for a living, I fix things.
Yeah.
But I had to learn to see it through her eyes. What is it that she needs? What is it her desire of the world? And I try to live through that. And sometimes I hit the mark, sometimes I don't. But if I don't, I try to come back and say, okay, I did. Obviously, I did something wrong. You ain't spoke to me in a couple of days. What do I need to do to fix this? I'm half joking with that, but she don't. No, she may say 24 hours. She made that talk to me, but that's just
to let her calm down.
I do think if we try to see the world through our spouse's eyes, what is it that they see, their perspective? Because if you understand that, it's a lot easier to me to handle how to engage. I've tried to learn my wife really well. What is it? I know I can tell she's upset about something, and she ain't got to say a word. I just look in her eyes and say, I said, Lord, I said, is it me?
That's the first question. Did I do something
I missed? And a lot of times it's something else. And she gets on me by that. Stop assuming it's you. It's not you, even a minuscule amount of the time. But I say that to me is how I do it now. But I've had to learn. I've made my errors over the years, and 28 years of kind of going through this, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, that's like without question. I could even see myself with anybody else. I mean, she knows me well. I know her well. When she's not around, I feel like a little kid, because I'm like, what am I going to do? She ain't around. And you know, the sad part about it, I don't ask her to do anything for me. I mean, my mom taught us to be extremely independent. I could cook my own food. I could clean my own clothes. Yeah. I don't ask her to do anything. Now, she'll do some things, but I don't ask her to. And I don't believe in that roles, so to speak. I think as a couple, you figure out what your individual roles are to be.
And individual couples need to figure that out for themselves. Yeah. You can't go by someone else's. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely not cookie cutter. And
what else what makes a good marriage?
I think, can I say something just a little edgy for me?
Sure.
Okay.
Just be
I will be mindful. Yes, indeed. Okay. So I think that the same thing that makes a great marriage is the same thing that makes a very good lover. And it's the selflessness that if my motivation is about your pleasure in this experience and your motivation is my pleasure in this experience, then neither of us will go without, right? Mm-hmm. So if we were to take what it is that the best of us intimately understand and to apply it vertically the way that we apply it horizontally, we would have different kinds of marriages, right? So what I have loved most in my experience with Matt is that because it's so important to me, his joy is as important to me as my own. Like, people thought it was very strange that I retired him so early, right? Mm. So I retired him at 45. So it's been a couple of years now. And, you know, because so many people orient from this very traditional, men are supposed to take care of women, blah, 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 blah. And see, I have issue with that, right? Mm-hmm. I think that taking care of someone can take on lots of different forms, right? So he takes care of me so well emotionally that for me to take on the financial responsibility of our household does not seem like an unequal exchange. Mm-hmm. And given the fact that I am an entrepreneur, there were so many years in which he carried us that the thing that I wanted more than anything was to give him back the freedom that he gave me to pursue my dreams. Because we got married so young, he never thought about who he wanted to be because he prioritized who he needed to be for us. And I had the gift of years of exploring who I wanted to be because he was my security blanket. I could rest in his work ethic and his consistency and his dependability. He was going to show up for his family. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of just continuing to draw from that well as if it never needs to be poured back into, for me, was just something that was unacceptable. So whether he wanted to choose to do something else, that is for him to decide. But I had the gift of 25 years of not having to think about how I was going to make any end meet. So for me, the motivation was to be able to give him as much freedom and love as he afforded me. So I would say fundamentally, what really makes great marriages is people who are not interested in how they get the most out of this relationship, but rather how each other can get the best out of the relationship.
Deep in it.
Go ahead. I know. There's so many ways I can unpack that.
You know, one of the things that really frustrates me, I've noticed, and sometimes you look at social media posts, and it seems like the younger folks of this day and time, I hate this kind of contrary relationship where the men and the women, everybody's saying, "No, I'm the prize. No, I'm the prize." I'm like, I mean, y'all stop that. You know, I don't want no broke this guy. Or I mean, just I mean, everything has gotten so monetary, you know, or mm-hmm. this issue of, well, you got to get on my program. I mean, you know, it's just everything is about their individual self.
As opposed to
I'm like,
couple.
You're never going to have a successful relationship like that. I mean, unless you want to just hire a maid.
Alvin, I want to ask you too, because in our discussion, our pre-show discussion this morning, one of our participants was talking about younger relationships where people get together at 19, 20, 17, 18 was the description that was given in the meeting. What is it about that age that allowed you all to be able to be strong and to really stay together? Because I mean, when you think about, especially in today's time, of somebody being 17 or 18 years old and they get married,
right?
I mean, it's like you're not even looking at them as dating at this point, but you know. But I mean, is there a secret sauce to that longevity actually continues to grow as you're growing? Because you all aren't even grown.
We weren't grown at that point.
We
were babies when we got married. And I honestly think that the core of it that some people do very well now and some people do not understand how important it is the friendship, right? I tell people very often that, look, I get to be around beautiful, talented, wealthy, accomplished men every day. That's my life, right? And I can appreciate all of those things about each of those men that I get to spend time with. But my fidelity to my husband is not actually because I'm married. It's because he's my friend. And I won't do my friend dirty like that. And so fundamentally, I believe the thing that makes it work is the friendship that underpins the relationship. And when you are young, you're not afraid of friendship. You don't self-protect in that kind of way, right? Like, so you are foolish enough to believe that we can really just be friends with each other and enjoy each other. And I can tell you what I'm really thinking. I mean, like, I've had dreams about, you know, relationships with other people, right? And I wake up and I tell him, do you know what happened last night? Because that's
really?
My friend.
That's
I tell
friend.
Him.
You
know, I'm
your
telling
friend.
My friend what's going on.
Right.
And just in case you need to pee on your tree, I just need you to know that.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
So what about, because I thought about this, because I know I had some difficulties early on because, you know, my father died really young. He was 41 when he passed away.
So
I was
did my
seven.
Husband's.
And so I didn't have any real sense of seeing what mm-hmm. a good marriage was supposed to look like. You know, when I really reflect back on that, and I'm trying to be careful because I don't want any family members that may be listening, you know, I don't want to get in trouble with this. But when you don't have any real model to
right.
model things behind, you can only just go on what you think
right.
is
mm-hmm.
right or
right.
correct. How much do you think that plays any factor in terms of if you have, say, like if you have a parent, two parents that raise a child and they're really loving that, your child seeing that relationship, does that play much of a factor?
So it's a beautiful question that you're asking because you can see very interesting things happen in almost conflicting ways. And what I mean by that is to say that my husband, like you, did not, his father passed away early. So he was in his 50s when his father passed away. And we started dating when we were 17 years old. So we were very young. And so he did not have a model either for what that was to look like. And the years that his parents were married, you know, as you're struggling through things and you're working class, you know, like it wasn't always beautiful either. Right. So it was a limited model. And then the model that you had its ups and downs inside of that, too. Right. And so and then my parents, contrasting, had been married since college. So it wasn't weird for me to do that culturally also because I'm first generation American. And so so I got the chance to see what dedicated relationship looked like, but that wasn't perfect either. Nothing is ever going to be a perfect model, right? So it is true that if it is a good representation, it can be helpful, but it doesn't guarantee any particular outcome because even as close and as beautiful, I mean, my kids to this day have never heard Matt and I fight, never. Mm-hmm. And we do not ever raise our voices at each other. And truth be told, is because I don't talk to my friends like that. So why would I be talking to my man like that, right? So I'm never disrespectful to him, and he, me neither, right? Mm-hmm. And so, so I would have assumed that my kids would have like picked flawless mates. You know, that's what I thought would have happened. Needless to say, wrong. Okay. Now, I love the people that my children have chosen to love. We've come to that place. I'm happy to say that now, but that was not the dating experience, you know, and we worried about what that would ultimately mean because you saw this. How could you do that? But the truth is what we don't get to control either is who our children fall in love with. We don't get to control the environments that those children came from. We don't get to control temperaments and traumas and all of those things that are all part of the relationship. I will just say that one of the things that we have to understand generationally, if we ever want to see marriage do what it's capable of doing, is being okay with the fact that we're going to have to grow up together, right? Like there are things that I may not know as a byproduct of what I came into this relationship with and things you may not know coming into this relationship. And we've got to be okay with the fact that we're going to learn some things. We're going to break some eggs. We're going to make some souffle. We're going to do some beautiful and ugly things together. But fundamentally, because we are friends and because I love you, we are going to do ugly things as pretty as we possibly can.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're talking about Black couples and committed relationships with relationship expert Dr. Alvian Lyons and my co-host for Another View on Health, cardiologist Dr. Keith Newby. 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers to call to join our conversation. Call us and tell us your love story. Let us know, are you in a committed relationship? And if you unfortunately may have had one at one time and things went south, you know, how did you deal with that? Because we're going to talk about some things that are in terms of what we do there. I want to talk about some of the key elements that have to be, that I believe should be in all relationships. And you guys can agree or disagree. First of all, communication.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. How important, how should you communicate with one another? Mm-hmm. Are there specific ways, or do you need to learn your own language?
So I want to say something that Keith said earlier that I think is really, really important. And when he was talking about how you care for, how a man cares for himself, right? I think one of the things we also have to remember too is that it's in my commentary around the little things, which is really what Keith is speaking to too, is the orientation that men will do the big things. I'll make the big sacrifice, right? But it's often the little sacrifices that really speak to the quality and longevity of the relationship. And I heard once said, I understand as a man that you are willing to die for your woman. But the question is, are you willing to live for her? And the difference between that, even from a medical perspective, is that to live for your woman means that you are paying attention to your health. You are watching how much sodium you're taking in. You're getting appropriate exercise. You are not smoking. You're not drinking more than you should. All of those things are small, consistent decisions that have huge long-term outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's so appropriate that we're talking about the, you know, metaphoric heart and we're talking about the actual heart, right? And so, but that very fact, the thing that creates health in the physical body, actually creates health similarly in the emotional body. It's the little things. And one of the core little things, the way that your diet matters, is the way that your communication matters. Mm-hmm. How do you talk to each other? Do you talk to each other? I worry about couples that don't naturally share their dreams with each other. Mm-hmm. If when you think about the big thing you want to do, the scary thing you want to do, you hold it tight, as opposed to telling your partner, that relationship is already in trouble. If when you disagree about something, your instinct is to attack the person rather than the issue, I worry about that couple. Two of those core things, because both of those speak to vulnerabilities and how we navigate them. Right. Mm-hmm. So to dream, people think like, you know, the biggest vulnerability is something, the fears, but truly the biggest vulnerability is the hopes, because they may not happen. And so for me to say out loud what I'm hoping for, what I'm believing for, and then it doesn't happen, is even more vulnerable than the fears themselves. Mm-hmm. So when my hopes are something I hide from you, something has broken down in the safety of the relationship. Because I do not believe that you believe in me, which is why I won't tell you what I'm dreaming about. So that is a core communication problem that is originating from some other things we can peel back at another point. How we do conflict. Conflict is not a problem in a relationship. But it's how you do the conflict is the problem. Because if he or she becomes everything but a child of God when you get upset, that is problematic. How I treat you when my emotions get high speak a lot to how I really see you. So if you cannot be kind while still navigating the anger that we will all have.
All have, yeah, because it's normal.
There's something that we've got to work on. So communication is huge.
People talk about fighting fair. What does that mean?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Because it's how because this is one of the things that women have got to understand about men. If he loves you, he will allow himself to be vulnerable with you. And being vulnerable means that he exposes his weak and raw spots. If when you get angry, you shoot him or stab him in the very spot that he told you was there, you will never have a man who is fully invested, even if he's dedicated enough to stay. He will never love you the way that you could have been loved, because he recognizes he has to protect himself from you.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. I mean, I listen to that and I think about the differences. Again, we talk about differences between men and women. Mm-hmm. And I will say that it makes total sense, because we will allow a certain degree of vulnerability until you take it away. Once we feel like that's in jeopardy, men will shut down. We will shut down. We won't. We'll be cordial. Mm-hmm. But we won't. We won't share anything anymore.
Cordial is totally different than being invested.
We'll be cordial and we'll be nice, and we'll be. But we won't. We won't say certain things anymore. We won't share certain things anymore. And it won't be. And we do things subtly. You know, we don't do it overtly. We just all of a sudden just stop talking.
Yep.
That's how we.
So if you find yourself in that situation, how do you then get them to start talking again? Is I'm sorry enough?
Well, I'm sorry the first time and maybe the second time. But once you get past that, you've already established your pattern.
Yeah.
Right? And unlike women, men are less likely, and I'm not saying any absolutes, just less likely to live for the possibility of a thing. They are far more likely to live in the actuality of a thing. So when God created us, God created us to be able to hold a seed and to produce an outcome, right? Mm-hmm. That is literally what our physical bodies do, while our emotional bodies do very similar things. That's why women are far more likely to stay in abusive relationships, because they're living for the moment when he was wonderful. You know, like, because that's the seed I'm going to hold on to, and I'm going to water this thing all day, every day, even though he's not giving me any of that anymore. Women are more likely to hold on to it, where men are more likely to live in the actuality. Wait a minute, you just did this thing? This thing is probably who you are. I'm going to wait 2 more minutes to find out if you do it again, and then you've defined it. We will give you pass after pass after pass when we are emotionally invested, you know? So there are some differences in the way that we operate, generally speaking, all right? So I'm not talking about the exterior elements of the bell curve. I'm talking about the center of the bell curve. And so there are real differences, and we have, the more we're aware of those differences, the better we are at being able to show up for each other.
In-laws. And you know, and honestly,
I'll jump in on that.
It's very interesting, because that is an experience that I don't have, because Maxie's parents are deceased. Uh-huh. And so I never met them, but he had in-laws.
Yeah.
Because both of my parents were around for a while. They're both deceased now, but
I will say this. I never had any issue with my in-laws. We're always cool. Now, my father-in-law passed away several years ago, but my mother-in-law, you know, she knows. I treat her with utmost kindness when she comes around. I actually enjoy her company. But I tell you, though, I find it interesting, as a physician, I have to interact with so many people, and I develop relationships with my patients. I don't just go over there and just pat them on the head, tell them they're fine, go about your way, put your copay on your way out. I actually develop relationships. And I have seen plenty of times, especially, and unfortunately so, I see this more, mothers and them sons. Mm-hmm. Oh, Lord. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to tell someone, you got to let this boy grow up and be a man. You know, I mean, it's bad, and they'll, like, interfere. Uh-huh. And I've always said, and that's a shame, that I shouldn't say this as a Christian, I'm quoting The Godfather, but that's always been my favorite movie. But there was a scene in that movie where who was it fighting? The daughter of Marlon Brando. Mm-hmm. And the brother Sonny wanted to keep jumping in. Every time he saw the husband and wife fussing, which was his sister, he would want to try to jump in and protect her. And the father's always, listen, don't interfere, you know, in that marriage.
Yes.
And that's where I think a lot of people will fail. They try to interfere, mm-hmm. you know, and they'll feel like, and they will justify that mm-hmm. for whatever reason they justified. Mm-hmm. And I've always, when they share that with me, I'll say, well, you need time out. You need to back off of that. Mm-hmm. once they marry, they have become one. You need to get away from that, because the more you interfere, you're going to be wondering why, if he turns on you, which he very well could do if in the future, you have to take accountability to that because you got in the way. I say, I hear you. And I understand that, but some people cannot let their kids go.
And the other part of that too, though, also is that some people tell their parent everything.
Right.
You know, when in the marriage, you are supposed to, like you said, keep it between the two people. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So I'm one of those moms.
Oh, Lord. Oh,
it's not awful. Like, it's not awful.
Oh, you just disappointed me.
I'm
so hurt.
And I will say this. So my son was a juvenile diabetic, right? I mean, he's a young adult now. And so there's having almost lost him when he was little. He literally almost died. I feel like I've spent my whole life trying to keep him alive. And the last thing I want to happen is somebody mess that up, you know, like, so. So I will say, and thank God for her. Sunny, I love you. Okay. So if you can hear this, I love you. She's wonderful, you know, like in terms of understanding both culturally our, you know, who we are as a family. We're a very, very close family, and emotionally being able to get the fact that you guys have lived a very unique experience because we've been through so many medical issues and things that have happened over the years that it makes me naturally more protective because I was his physician almost. You know what I'm saying? I was 911. I didn't sleep through the night for 14 years because at 3 a.m. we needed to check blood sugar. You know, like it was very much that world. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, it created an unusual bond between us because we were very dependent on each other, right? And so I recognize, and I totally cop to it though. So like, I'm not one of those who are like blind to it. I totally cop to it. And I will tell Sunny sometimes, like, listen, if I'm doing too much, just let me know, you know, like so that I am not, because I don't want to, Keith is absolutely right. I don't want to undermine what they're building relationally. Mm-hmm. But I recognize that I have such a bond with him because of what we've been through that I totally can tell you that had he not been a juvenile diabetic, he was diagnosed at 4. Had he not been, our relationship would be completely different
than the way it is.
Completely different.
Well, I tell you, I find it interesting with that. I do also, you know, I kind of have this alpha male personality. I'm not going to lie on that one.
Really?
I'm not going to lie on that one. You know, it's kind of interesting. When I was 18, I remember my mom was like, you know, I had to go to the doctor or something. She was like, you want me to go with you? I'm like, for what? I'm 18. I don't need to go with me to the doctor anymore. I mean, I kind of had this thing in my world where I felt like once I felt like I could claim adulthood, like I moved out at 19 and I never looked back.
Yeah.
I was broke. I mean, I've been broke in my life where I'm sharing residence with roaches. I'm like, wait a minute, y'all ain't paying no rent out here. You know, but I say all that to say that in my world, and when I got married, I was very clear with my mom, boundaries. You know, so
setting boundaries.
Yeah, so I was very clear. Now, she never tried to, you know, extend it, but I was very upfront. Well, I'd say, okay, you know, this is my life now. These are my boundaries that I have. And I didn't say it, always with respect, but I had my sense on what I was going to deal with and what I wasn't. And I wanted to, you know, kind of be a preemptive strike so that I didn't have to worry about certain things. But I know a lot of men don't do that. They're a little bit more docile than I am, or I was. And so I look at the world a little differently, but I was very, very clear with that.
So speaking of boundaries, let's talk about children and stepchildren, bonus children, mm-hmm. bonus babies, bonus as I call babies. Them. Mm-hmm. Especially if the bonus baby is not acting.
Misbehaving. Right.
Nicely.
Right.
If you are the parent of the bonus baby that's not acting the way that they're supposed to, how do you manage them and your spouse because you're trying to keep your marriage straight?
She's throwing it was a good question out there. That's one of those tough ones. I'm waiting to see your response to that one.
So I think there are, it also, it depends slightly on the age
grown
of the bonus
children.
Babies. Right. Because that impacts how yeah. the what the response needs to be, right? So when they're younger, yes. there is a level of dexterity you're going to have some flexibility around that, because they too are accepting and acknowledging that the thing that they often dream of is their both parents getting right. back together mm-hmm. or there being opportunity for reconciliation. And that doesn't go away in kids unless they grew up in brutally abusive environments. Yeah. Generally speaking, they'll still always want it to
be
get
mommy
fixed.
And daddy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So once, if we take that off of the table and we're talking about adults now, that is a different story. So when the adult child is acting a fool, as we would call it, in our community, that's when we have to have the other thing that we call a come to Jesus, all right? Because what cannot happen is that you who has your own life decides for me what my life is going to be, especially considering the fact that you are not going to take care of me. So I need to have, as the parent, the opportunity to have the relationship that I need for me. You may disagree. You may not like this person, but we are going to be respectful about the relationship. I cannot force like. That is absolutely a byproduct of connection, right? Mm-hmm. But I can establish boundaries around respect, what we will do and what we won't do. And as long as those boundaries are fuzzy, you're going to get the act of fool superpower that will be present all the time, because I can get away with this and still maintain our connection. It doesn't mean that you abandon your children because of conflict, because even your adult children need you. But it may mean that our relationship is going to have to look like this as opposed to that, because of your inability to navigate whom I love, right? And it's, these are two adults that are also inside of this situation. So mm-hmm. being able to be honest also with your own partner, if you recognize that they're doing things that are contributing to the conflict, we are the more grown individuals inside of this. We can be a little more flexible in what we will and will not do, but I still can hold my children accountable for respect the same way that I would when I sent them to school or when they met the neighbors.
Interesting.
Interesting. Absolutely.
Well, wait a second. You talk about bonus children. I was going to say just raising children, period.
Period.
Because I tell you, the only fight sure. I've ever had with Peggy is Marcella.
Really? Parents will say that.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
their
I'm going to tell you, because that is,
because
she's on me all the time, because, I mean, Marcella and I are like this. I mean, time she came out the womb, she was at my side and has never left. And she's a junior, a rising senior in college now. And
so that
and
means that she's
still,
got you wrapped around that baby finger.
And he's unapologetic.
And he's unapologetic.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, that is like my heart there. I mean, but and that's our only conflict has been.
Yeah.
And she's right on a lot of things. You know, I need to be a little harder on her. But one of the things that, to me, I see young women that breaks my heart when I see young women that have daddy issues. And
yes.
they look for love
yes.
elsewhere.
Yeah. All the wrong
and
places.
I did not want her to ever experience
absolutely.
That. Now, I may have taken it a little bit on the extreme. But I wanted
see,
her
it's
to.
It's like the mommies.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And we are. I can't believe I love this.
We're out of time already.
Almost.
I love
but
it.
I want to get to this point
okay.
to, because I want you to answer this, Alvin.
Sure.
Marriages are hard. I mean, you have to work at them every single day. I think we would all agree with that. But when do you know that you've done all you can and you can and you stood and and now you've got to make a decision. Mm-hmm. I mean, in other words, does it matter to take years before you come to that point? Or how do you understand, I've given it the best shot I can, it's not going to work?
Okay. So biblically, one would say that, because if depending upon how core that is to mm-hmm. your decision making, one would say that it would need to line up with the things that the Bible would speak to around, you know, infidelity. And, mm-hmm. you know, so like, so if that's your core, that would be guiding much of your decision making. Now, let me be very clear. Abuse takes everything off the table. Okay. So let me be crystal clear about that. Mm-hmm. There is no version that makes that okay, nor should you stay. And I mean both physical and emotional abuse. All right. So, but the challenges that are naturally inside of marriage, most of those things can be worked out, with the exceptions of if you're married to a narcissistic partner, because you can't do anything about that. Mm-hmm. And whether or not you are talking about someone who is unbelievably selfish and manipulative, when you are dealing with those kinds of things where the relationship will always be giving but never receiving, mm-hmm. those are relationships that are very difficult for there to be a change in trajectory. So I always say to people, everyone's threshold is different in terms of what they can endure. And marriage shouldn't just be about endurance from a how much pain can you put up with, but endure from a sense that I can work through these various things. Once you have gotten outside support and assistance, once you've done all that you can do, it is okay for you to make the decision that you need to make. But the question I always say to people is, if this ends, will you have any regret as to what you could have done that you haven't exercised yet? Until you've exercised all of the options, I often say, wait until you know that, because divorce itself is also its own grieving process. You will find that you will romanticize a lot of the things that are problematic now. So in order to grieve well the loss of that relationship and to be healthy enough to start another one, you need to know that you've done everything you could in your previous.
Last 2 minutes. Each one gets a minute.
Okay.
Word of advice.
Oh, just well, I always say, look at your wife or your spouse through their eyes. I can't emphasize that enough. See the world as they see it. Understand their perspective of things. It is easier to work with them under that premise. And I say, just try your best to be selfless in a marriage. Even if you don't feel like you're getting what you think you deserve, do what your part. To me, I always feel like I've done my bit. If I feel like I've given it all and I put my best effort forward, even if I'm not getting back what I think I should get back, for me as my alpha male mentality, is I still should do that because my dedication and love for my spouse is such that I would be selfless in my thought process and in my giving.
Cardiologist Dr. Keith Newby, thank you so much. Dr. Lyons, you have the last word.
So I would say probably three things. That one would be work to invest in the friendship, you know, because the youth will fade eventually. And friendship is the thing that's going to keep you warm, right? Two, understand your partner's love language. Because to love someone in a language different than the one that they speak is for me to speak Japanese to you when your primary language is Spanish, right? Mm-hmm. Learn their love languages. And then three, a favorite, is shower together. Now, people may think that that's weird, but you know, I fundamentally believe in it because of what it teaches you. And it's the sense that you can be completely vulnerable and still find each other beautiful inside of that and be okay with washing away whatever didn't work that day in order to be clean together for what we're going to do tomorrow.
Dr. Alvian Lyons.
I love it.
She's the bomb. Audience, we hope that you've enjoyed this edition of Another View and that we gave you some food for thought in your own relationship. Want to hear the show again? Just go to whro.org/anotherview or to whatever platform you use for your podcast listening pleasure. I'm taking some time off to enjoy my birthday, which is this coming Monday, June 29th. So Lisa Godley will be in the host seat for next week's show. I'll be back with you live on July 9th. Our theme music is an original composition created especially for Another View by Jay Sennett. Lisa Godley is our show producer. Jordan Christie is our audio engineer, and Dr. Barry Graham answered our phones. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. Have a fantastic weekend, everyone, and be sure to join Lisa Godley next Thursday at noon for Another View.
Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, carrying out your charitable wishes forever. Whether it's helping shelter animals, feeding the homeless, enhancing the arts, or supporting students. Learn more at leaveabequest.org.